I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This month, Streaming Things is brought to you by our super Patreon supporters, Chester Copperpot, Jade, Jillian Morgan, Aaron Layton, Andrew Gray, Casey McCain, Crystal Trujillo, Jen Robinson, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate, Kiki Newton, and Will Nash.
Kick.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, one podcast to rule them all.
And in the RSS feed, bind them.
Except we don't really rule them. It's more of a democratic, friendly nature.
Like, yeah.
If we were ever to meet another podcast, we would be kind.
Yeah. We're like, citizens, lend me your ballots. And, you know.
Well, we're like the modern day monarchy. Just figureheads, really.
Truly.
So we just finished episode 3 of The Rings of Power. It is named Adar. Adar!
First of his name? I don't know.
We don't know how many Adars that there have been.
All we know about Adar is he is potentially a blurry boy.
That's true.
A very blurry boy. Much like me on that screen right now. I'm very blurry there.
What if Adar, like Bigfoot, is just blurry in real life?
That would be hilarious.
And that's just the way that he looks. Yeah. And everybody's knocking him for no reason.
Wasn't there a skit with Robin Williams where he just like, I'm feeling just a little, you know, out of touch, right? Out of focus right now. And he's like the one out of focus character that's on screen.
Probably.
Not talking about it at all. It's hysterical.
That sounds right.
I have no memory of that.
No.
So the way that this works is we'll talk about some corrections that we might have from previous episodes of the Rings of Power coverage, things that we got wrong, which happens often, especially with lore as deep as this. And then we'll give our overall thoughts on episode 3. Then we'll do a scene by scene breakdown and recap, followed by Second Breakfast, which is where we talk about some, you know, lore tidbits, maybe Easter eggs, if that applies to this, you know, content at all. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do a section we call Old Toby, finest scenes in the South Father.
Old Toby.
We talk about our top 3 favorite moments of the episode, and then we'll cap it off with the one scene to rule them all. One performance to rule them all. Our favorite performance of the episode. So that's how these episodes work. Thank you all for tuning in and supporting us and listening. As always, love you so much. So any hoozle, we're going to dive right in here in a moment. But first, I want to do something a little different. I didn't even tell Steve and Andy, and that's why I forgot to mention it. So
you're throwing me a curveball this early in the episode?
That's the best time because everything else is just smooth sailing, don't you think?
Oh, man. We'll see. We'll find out.
Hey, man, you take that curve, and then it's fastballs from then on out.
Baseball.
Well, as you all know, mm-hmm.
Sports.
We often ask for ratings and reviews on like iTunes or Apple Podcast app, Spotify, wherever you're listening to it. And I read all of them. And I think all of us do, I think. But I certainly spend, I think it's part of my daily regimen. Just check the new ones that come in and so on and so forth. So I wanted to read this review because I found it heartening, touching, if you will.
Oh, okay.
So this review is called Very Enjoyable, and it's by Tabby.
Old Tabby.
And it says, I love listening to these guys talk through my favorite shows, from Stranger Things to The Rings of Power. I will say, when I search for any podcast, I, as a woman, prefer something with at least one woman in it. But when it comes to review podcasts, that can be a very hard find. I imagine it is. Three dudes over here just shaking their heads.
Mm-hmm. What a novel concept.
Indeed. However, while these three guys can be very guy, quote unquote, LOL, they are also amazing when it comes to talking about women characters and being allies in general. I also find their tone and their pacing very easy to listen to, which may not be of note to most listeners, but as a person with ADHD and health issues that often cause migraines, the pacing of most podcasts is very hard for me to follow. I just wind up zoning out. So people who go at a decent pace, talking, not super fast, and who keep it fresh and entertaining too, is something I value and something these guys are awesome at. Aww. When I am not feeling well, but also stuck in traffic or doing chores, I need something to be a good distraction. And these guys have joined only about two other podcasts that fit that bill. Oh, so I'm very grateful to them and this podcast in helping me laugh and in helping me take my mind off the shite feeling of being sick. It's also very clear they care about their listeners beyond just being faceless numbers. I definitely recommend you give them a try. So that was a longer review.
That was very enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah, thank indeed, you, Tabby. Indeed. Thank you.
I was just, I don't think I was having the best mental health day the other day when I read that review, and it helped a lot. So I just want you guys to know, the reason I wanted to do that was just to tell you that I read the reviews and they mean a lot to me. And it's awesome that I can imagine somebody kind of trying to find a show to check out and coming upon that review and maybe, oh, okay, you know, or if not, even if I'm the only one that reads it, I was very much appreciative of that. So just want to throw that out there. We read them all. They make me feel good.
I just want to throw this out here, Chris. There's probably an elephant in the room right now, especially for
that's
people.
Ellie. She's a dog.
She is. You're right.
An elephant.
No, especially for the people who watch us on YouTube is yes.
Oh, the beard.
I don't have my beard.
Oh, yeah.
I messed up shaving really badly this week and I had to shave it all off. I'm not thrilled about it. So, but luckily for you, you get to see this 12-year-old boy talk to you about Lord of the Rings and
look at that chin. Mm. Shit.
I think you look fabulous, Steve.
You look great, man.
You got the shadow already. In a week's time, it'll be a smaller beard, kind of like I have.
It's sprouting out.
Last time you shaved your head too, so you know, this isn't nearly as drastic.
Let's start off with a few corrections in episodes past. I can't recall if I said this or not, so I'm just going to say it again. But I know that I said that at one point, The Rings of Power is based on the Silmarillion. It is not. The Amazon has no rights to the Silmarillion. They own rights to Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, and that's it. So like the Legendarium, the Silmarillion, the something letters, there's another book, a super nerd canon, which is just like letters and stuff that Tolkien wrote. They can't access any of that. They're not allowed to use any of that. So all they can use for this story is because this is the Silmarillion would have been great because it talks at length about all this stuff in the Silmarillion. All they have is the appendices to the Lord of the Rings. So
which
like
is probably a book in and of itself.
As I recall, it's 90 pages of stuff or whatever, but it's just like little anecdotes and notes about what happened. So they don't have much to go on.
And this is the appendices specifically in Return of the King.
Probably.
Right? I think.
Probably. But all I know for sure as a correction is it's not technically based on the Silmarillion. So I said that a few times. That was wrong every time. And they also really don't have the rights to the original Lord of the Rings movies, Peter Jackson's movies either. So they can't like directly reference those blatantly either. So I think a lot of the issues that hardcore fans are having, like the ones that are not prejudiced, they just can't be gotten around by Amazon, like for legal dumb reasons, right? That's really not their fault. It's just the way that the business of it's kind of like how there was no X-Men in the MCU just because they didn't own the right and they couldn't say mutant shit like that. Like it's just legal stuff that gets in the way. So I wanted to say that. I also said many times how much I love the performance of Morfydd Clark. That is not her name. At least that's not how you pronounce it.
Okay.
It is. And I'm probably going to butcher even this correction, but I believe it's Morvith.
Morvith.
So even though it's M-O-R-F-I-D-D Y-D-D, it is V and T-H that you use as the sound, like Morvith.
Interesting.
Morvith Clark, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, so she's the villain.
Aha!
or is that Morgoth? Oh, damn, it's close. Yeah,
so close. so close. Less goth. And then finally, we got a couple of emails. We'll probably talk about this again on the mailbag because it's really fun. We got an explanation in our Discord and an email about...
In our Discord?
The edible...
I missed it?
No, you were... Or did you not? You haven't looked at Discord at all, have you?
No, not while I've been gone.
Now I want to pull it up exactly because I don't want to give Steve wrong info. This is all new to him.
Okay.
So there is an etymological root.
Things are happening, guys. It's happening right now.
It turns out, Steve, that rattle your dags.
Oh, shit. I don't know if I want to know.
Oh, are you gonna ruin the spell?
I have headcanon.
Of dags being rattled to me.
It is a real world canon. And I'm trying to find the exact... Here it is. Per Urban Dictionary.
Okay.
Rattle your dags. And this is from Jordan-esque in the Discord. Rattle your dags. Get a move on. Hurry up. So we got that much.
Okay. All right.
It's from sheep dags. Crusty bits of dried shit stuck in the fleece around the bum, which rattle as they run. So wow. The dags are the little crusty turds that rattle as they run.
Who sent that in?
That was the
Jordan-esque.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But we also,
you somehow made rattle your dags an even greater thing in my life. That
so dags are not feet. They are the crusted turds.
They are dingleberries and sheep.
That's correct.
They're sheep dingleberries.
We also got an email about that. So we'll probably read that again on mailbag day.
Oh my gosh.
Rattle your dags.
Oh man. I leave the show for 5 days and I come back to this. What a treat.
This is kind of a fun game for me finding out like Middle Earth slurs. Pejoratives, cuss words.
Oh, yes.
Sloth about is the one I caught today.
Sloth about?
Yeah, dang. Sloth about. All right. Episode 3, Ada. It starts off with Arendir being carried. Oh, no. Before we do that, I'm actually really curious. I want to get this off my chest and I'm actually scared. Steve, what did you think about this episode? Episode 3.
I thought it was fine. A lot of my complaints from the second episode are snowballing. It appears they're not getting better in terms of like, let's start focusing on something, please. Mm-hmm. And in this episode alone, they're like, all right, we're going to start this. I don't know. We're not a B plot anymore. It's like at this point, we're at like,
there's so many letters.
K or L
plot. We're in the elven alphabet.
Where they're like, here's this
Quinion,
this dude and his family and his kid wants to be a shipmate, but not really. And he's got a sister and they've got lines. And I'm like, who are these people? Can we go back to Arendir? Cause at least like that was the most interesting part of this episode. Everything else, I was just kind of like, all right, come on, let's get back to, can we see the elf or can we see the dwarf guy again? Can we see Durin? Yeah. What's Elrond doing? We left Celebrimbor in the fucking sticks 2 episodes ago.
He's still walking.
Did he make it back home? I'm pretty still out confident there?
Celebrimbor has no bearing on the plot, like the overall plot.
Hello, I'm lost. But I don't know. It's just kind of, they were just introducing a lot of things I didn't really care about.
Sure. Yeah.
And I was frustrated because there are things in this show that I do care about. They just seem to just want to focus on these other things so much, and I don't know how important they are.
Nori has a sister now, so that's a thing.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that, Andy. Because Andy and I both had this like knee-jerk reaction when is that her sister or is that her brother? I don't know. Some younger sibling just pops out. Can we keep him? And we're like, who the fuck is that?
They did. That is verbatim what happened.
Has this person always existed on this show?
We don't know. Who the fuck is that?
So this, like I said, this episode seems to be compounding a lot of my issues that I really want them to just shuffle off the fat and really focus on the meat and really get the story rolling. Cause we're like almost halfway done with the series, right? It's only 8 episodes long, right?
Yeah. Correct.
And this is episode 3.
Mm-hmm. Quick so we're almost reach the halfway point.
We're almost halfway there. We should be through act 1, but I don't feel like we've actually even gotten to the beginning of act 1. Mm-hmm. We're all still setting up act 1. It's weird.
Well, there was one huge plot point revealed in this episode, but yes, I'm with
Blurally.
You. Yeah. Blurally. I would say it's more Halbrand.
Oh,
that whole thing.
Okay. Yeah. And mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get there.
But Andy, what were your overall thoughts?
I'm Steve. It was okay. Again, some high highs, but it felt pretty plodding. But I just have to say, fuck, the show is gorgeous. Like set design, the costumes, like you can see the money, even when it was just like the side plot they don't care about, and the dude's son on the boat. And it's like, and I know he's important, but the dude's, the dude's son
our
on
listeners
the boat
are going nuts right now. The dude!
I just kept being like, fuck, that's a nice
Excuse
boat.
Excuse me, sir. Say his real name.
They built that boat and we got to see some places that we've only ever heard about, and that was awesome. Again, just the design of the world is so beautiful and so true to what we experienced growing up, and so I had fun with it, even though I don't think that it was like the best as far as like moving the plot along.
Absolutely.
Chris?
So I have to be very careful here in my mind, because we got a lot of emails about people that switched to our podcast during the Stranger Things coverage. And I'm not going to name any names, but there's some other big podcasts. And we got dozens of emails like, God, you can just tell how much you guys love Stranger Things, if nothing else. And like a lot of these other podcasts are just constantly having bad takes, getting it wrong. And they just don't even feel like they enjoy watching the show. So it's like, why are you making a podcast about it? Thanks, guys. We got something to that effect dozens of times. And so I don't want to be stuck covering Rings of Power when I don't like Rings of Power. And I don't want to like inflict that upon our listeners. Right. I hated this episode strongly. I feel like I felt like it was, and maybe I'm just, you know how I kind of get emotional and overreact, but like it was in the midst of everything going on in my life. It was so mind numbingly plodding that I was like, uh-oh. And they're like not the even just that, anymore. Like I like to meander, especially the show this expensive, like Andy said, it's gorgeous. But I think it's a case of like so much style over substance. They're just like, hey man, we paid $322,000 to actually build this boat and have all the little filigree on their armor and stuff. So we're going to do this in slow-mo and we're going to linger for 11 minutes on this minute and a half scene because we spent so much money on it. Isn't it pretty? And I'm like, it is pretty, but I'm fucking bored to tears. And I'm just going off right now because I want to vent. I just want to be
popping off.
I just want to keep it real.
He's popping off.
And like you said, and we'll get into exactly why. So I don't want to spend this whole episode though being like, and then this fucking guy, like sure, I'm not interested in doing that.
Yeah. I don't for like our doing listeners. That either. Yeah. I don't like doing that either.
But like, that's how I feel. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say a couple things from time to time, like that really bother me. There is a lot to like as well. And like you said, like I love the first two episodes. And it kind of goes back to our conversation about Kenobi as well, because it's like there's also this element of like the kind of person that has been outspokenly against this particular show really makes me want to love it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
But I do think a lot of the problems, that's why I brought that up, that I have fall back to them. They don't have the rights to the Silmarillion. And so they keep coming up with these like tangential ways to kind of bring you back to the spirit of the Peter Jackson movies. And it's kind of annoying me more than it's working. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we'll get to a couple of examples, but I'm going to try to focus on stuff I loved. I do like this show. I think it'll pick up very soon, but I'm frustrated. A couple people in our Discord were like, hey, I'm really excited for you to watch it, knowing that ours is delayed this week. I love this episode, Chris, let me know. And I'm just like, oh no. Anywhoozle, let's dive right in. So it opens with Aaron Deere being carried. So last time we saw him, he was dragged out of the like a wet tunnel by a bunch of orc hands. And we find out every elf that was in his company that was supposed to go back home is captive of these orcs, right? Mm-hmm. I know I just said what I said. How the fuck is that possible? I'm sorry. They're all elves. They're like world-class immortal warriors that have trained for millennia. And orcs just get destroyed like candy in Peter Jackson's movies.
Well, they took them by surprise. They didn't know the orcs were there. Like
Legolas would not have been caught by himself by any of those.
Yeah. Well, Legolas is like
making a whole army of elves. Like super fuck badass. Shit.
Yeah, but Legolas is like the Michael Jordan of elves. Like, you know, they're like young elflings who are like, oh, I've got dream team card of Legolas on the Fellowship.
I've got my
Scotty
new
Pippin.
You see my new pair of Legolas fours?
Yeah, he's 100% the Jordan of elves, you know? So you can't really compare other, you know, day-to-day elves to the boy Legolas, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
He, or I said the boy, the man, right? And like Andy said, you know, we don't know. It is kind of silly. It is at first because we only got to spend so few time with those other elves. So when they're revealed to already have been captured, there's a moment where Andy and I were like, is that the guy who was walking with the first episode? We're like, yes. I guess. Yeah.
And like my biggest problem with this episode in particular, but like they keep trying to shove these unearned emotional moments down your throat. Cause it's like, there's a number of them. Like there's some slow-mos, some character deaths, some like characters in danger. I don't care about any of it. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, and I don't think that's my fault. I'm like, I'm trying to keep fucking tabs on what's going on.
Yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, really with this scene in particular, what's going on with the prison camp or the work camp that we see Erendir in. Out of all those characters, Erendir is the one that we know the best.
Yes.
We feel for him the most. We've spent the most time with him. But
well, he's the only one whose name we know.
He's the only one whose name we know. But at the same time, we haven't really exactly spent a lot of time with Erendir, really.
Yeah.
No.
Like maybe a combined 20 minutes over the course of three episodes.
He, right. He milked that cow.
So if he was killed,
I remember that.
let's not remember that. If he were to be killed in this episode, then it'd be like, oh, okay, that was that's Erendir, the guy we know. But like when it's like, oh, there's the guy who kind of walked in the background and said, you flirt with that girl again.
Right. Yeah.
And that's literally all he says. It doesn't ring true.
We don't even know for sure if it was that guy.
Guy.
We saw him so little.
We're pretty sure.
Yeah, we're pretty sure though.
Okay.
Because definitely the watch warden, the other gentleman was the watch warden.
Like his boss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mayor Doc or something. I took his name down.
Now, if we want to be positives, I really, really love the design of the orcs.
Yes.
I think the practical orcs
are amazing.
I love how the orcs are kind of in this, you know, because the sun hurts them at this point. They're like basically vampires. So they're like they're in these like tattered, ragged robes.
Their skin starts to glitter when they get in the sunlight.
Yeah. I'm a killer, Bella.
But they've fashioned like a shanty roof over the tunnel that they're building. And they kind of like huddle behind that and they won't go out into the sunlight. And at one point, one of the orcs is like, oh, I already had the day shift. And he's like, oh, you'll be out in the sun till your back is cold. Like, I love that type of shit. Like, I think all of the orc mannerisms. They
captured the spirit of the orcs from the Peter Jackson movies for sure.
There's literally one shot in particular towards the end where an orc, I think he's holding up an axe, but he's doing this like he's got his mouth open and he's snarling. And like, that is a Two Towers orc if I've ever seen one. Like, at any point he could have said like, nah, what about them? They're fresh meat.
It looks like meat's back on the menu, boys. Yeah, I love the practical orcs, and we should have said, I don't know if we talked too much about it, but it's pretty obvious at this point that the Southlands, just if you've ever looked at a map before in the current timeline of Lord of the Rings, is Mordor. Mm-hmm. We're all on the same page there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what they're doing. They're blighting the land. They're cutting down the trees. They're digging trenches so they can go to other villages and be like, ah, see?
Gotcha. Trees are strong, my lord. And the roots go deep.
Is this the origin story of how the orcs discovered how to take down trees? Because in this episode, they're like, we can't do nothing about that tree.
Fuck. Yeah. What do you do with that?
We need the elves. Chop it down. And then this is when we find out about Adar, which every time I say that name, I think of the villain from A Knight's Tale, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
First Jocelyn and now Adimar. That's what I think of every time. But it's just Adar.
Rupert.
Yes.
What's his last
Rupert
name?
Rupert something.
Suis?
Sewell.
Sewell. Rupert Sewell.
But it definitely is Adibaw. But it's not that. It's Adar. So that's what's going on. They're all, you know, basically breaking rocks in prison.
They're digging the tunnels they've been hiding under.
Yeah, that they didn't need the elves to dig before. So now I don't know why they need them now and wouldn't just kill them. That seems to probably save them trouble in the long run.
Sorry, it's Rufus Sewell.
Rufus.
Rufus, not Rupert. Sorry. Rufus.
Wrong.
Samsonite.
Just grind the show to a halt talking about Rupert. Halbrand and Galadriel on the boat is what we cut to next. They've been rescued by a mysterious seaman, mm-hmm. we'll say. Mm. And they try to inject some humor a few times and sometimes it works. This is one of those moments. Halbrand specifically has a pretty good relationship with Galadriel ever since he saved her. And he's, gives her like some oatmeal or some gruel or something. And she kind of sniffs at it and he's like, it's not poison. And she takes a bite and he's like, at least not for humans. Yeah. I thought that was a pretty decent joke.
Yeah.
A little, maybe it's poisonous to elves joke. And she's like, ha, 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 might be. No.
I wonder what that would be. Like, what is poisonous to humans, but or not poisonous to humans, but is to elves. I feel like it would be McDonald's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any kind of like processed food with like high MSGs.
Yeah. Like fried Oreos.
High fructose corn syrup.
Yeah. The elves are like, no.
Like you give them a Nutty Buddy and they're like, ah, yeah. Tell me, where is Gandalf? He was supposed to pack the fudge rounds. And she's an Eldar. That's another word for elves. And that's what bothers me about Tolkien. It's like, I'm trying really fucking hard, man. I'm taking notes. I'm a smart guy. I've read Lord of the Rings at least twice. I've watched the movies dozens of times, but there's like elves. And then they're also Eldar. They speak Elvish, which is also Quenya, which might be a dialect of Elvish. I'm not sure. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's too much going on.
Like, what's going on?
Yeah,
what's going on?
It's realistic, but it's like,
oh yeah,
as much as our world, as the real world.
Correct.
And it's like that's enough.
It's too much. Yeah.
Aren't they called Valar as well? Or
no, Valar are like the gods.
Oh, okay.
They're like the beings before things existed.
Okay.
Like the Valar were just floating around in space. Like, what's up, man?
What do we do?
Should we make something?
Okay.
I call this an elf.
I made a dwarf. But I mean, I can try again. I mean, I see you're batting 1,000 over there.
Yours are all stubby and hairy.
That's how I like it.
You think these are stubby? Check out these hard foots. Anyway,
hard feet.
That's what they do. And then there's this.
That's the Valar.
You guys just have to offset me, I'll speak your negative thoughts. Because then this conversation is one of the worst things I've ever seen. She's like, hello. And he's like, what up? You're on my boat. And she's like, who are you? And he's like, you'll see. And she's like, all right, where are we going? And he's like, ha, you'll see. And he's like, home. She's like, no, but seriously. And he's like, home. And then there's like this long moment where the audience is just forced to say, so where is that? And then there's like this next scene. Is it the next scene when they're in like Rockhead Land?
So Rockhead Land.
he basically says Nunya with the, like for no reason.
Newman Nunya.
Like, why wouldn't he just tell him? And then it cuts to the next scene. We get giant rock faces and stuff. And it's like there's the vibe of that scene is such that I felt like you were supposed to know where that was. You know what I mean? Because it's such a long, winding.
Oh, it's the faces.
Yeah. Place. Like my first thought watching it was, oh, that's fucking Gondor, bruh.
Oh, shit.
Because I saw the giant Denethor like jumping pad.
Jumping pad.
And it reminded me of that scene when they're on the little boats and they saw like the giant statues and stuff. And
yeah, I think they're trying to evoke the grand majesty of seeing those type of locales that are in the original.
You are
movies.
Supposed to remember that scene like I remembered because that's legally the closest they can get.
Yeah, I don't think you were supposed to know what Numenor looked like, but you were supposed to get that feeling that hit of dopamine, like, oh, we're about to see a cool thing.
And it was.
You hear
gorgeous.
The sweeping score of like, look at this beautiful city, and it looks beautiful.
Yeah, and Bear McCreary's crushing it. I do love the score throughout this episode. Sometimes it was a little really like good. So epic, and I did not even understand what was going on in the scene. I was like, oh, is this epic?
Can I share with you guys?
Oh my God, it's home.
Can I show you guys my hot take of the show so far?
Yeah.
Everyone's been talking about how great the score is of the show. I think the score is 100% mediocre at best, including Howard Shore's intro music. It does not, it's not memorable at all. Like,
Steven,
I cannot think of
you take
thing.
That back, you put it back and you keep it deep down inside.
All right, I'm going to bury it until it causes a stroke later in life.
Memorable. I'll give you that. I have no idea what it sounds like at this moment. Mm-hmm. It's definitely no Pirates of the Caribbean. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that would be dope. Going into Numenor.
That's amazing.
But yeah, that's my hot take. I just wanted to, I know a lot of people love it, and I'm glad you do. But like the score from the original trilogy is like so memorable and so huge. So that's why when everyone was like, oh, do you know Howard Shore did the intro? Like, I wish you hadn't told me.
Yeah.
Because I think the intro music is.
He was smoking a little old Toby at the time.
He was like, I'll fit this in between.
And that's
my
the
projects.
Thing. If they had the rights to the movies, they could have these little like. Cues,
motifs, music.
Yeah,
motifs.
Like Game of Thrones just straight up used the same one, you know, House of Dragon.
Right.
And so it is, in fact, Numenor, which is an ancient kind of race of men. They live longer. So the Numenorians live to be 200-400 years old, as far as I can recall. And that is the species of man of which Aragorn is a part. So he's, what's the, another word for a Numenorean? Is it
Dunedain?
Dunedain? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, you're right.
And when I was reading it as a kid, I'd say Dunedain. Definitely not it. It's Dunedain, right?
Dunedain.
Dunedain. Not my fault. I was 10. And then we learn about the history of Numenor. So the Valar, the gods, granted them the island. They created the island for the Numenoreans for fighting alongside the elves against Morgoth.
The Valar did?
Yeah. So the Valar raised the island for fighting with the elves.
Oh, okay.
And then
missed that part.
Then they became dicks and said that we're not going to hang out with elves no more.
No more.
And in fact, elves can't come here.
Basically the American Revolution.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they spilled a bunch of elvish tea in the bay.
So wait, in that analogy, the elves are colonizers? Is that what you're saying? Might be. So nobody in Numenor likes elves. They haven't seen one in like, how many? Because it's multiple generations of Numenorean.
My grandfather's great-grandfather's.
But their lifespan, that's like 1,500 years or something?
Sure.
Yeah, long time.
Presumably.
Long time. And what's cool about elves is like, Galadriel was alive then.
Yeah, she was there.
It's like, dang, I ain't been here forever.
Man, this place used to be so nice.
Is that a new rock face? That's a nice rock face.
There was only three when I was last here. Now there's five.
It's all just a bunch of Walmarts now.
Yeah, so they walk into like the council chambers and they're like, hold up, Elendil, you got to wait. And then he's like, oh shit, you got an elf? Never mind, you better roll through here. And then Halbrand tries to help. He's like, kneel. And that's another like attempt at humor, you know. Was it Queen Regent Muriel? It's like, well, no one kneels here. And it really sets him off on a bad foot. So what if she had said, you bow to no one?
Yeah. My friends.
Trademark. But Galadriel is too proud. She's like, this whole exchange with the Queen Regent is a little frustrating for me because like, I understand. I love Galadriel's character. I love how badass she is. I wish we saw more of a Clark and doing some like, you know, combat and stuff.
Kicking
right?
ass.
Yeah. I'd like the troll stuff from episode one. I want more of that. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like at times she's a little too focused on her goal, a little too stern.
Too firebrand and like, tactless.
She's like 10,000 years old or, you know, 7,000 years old. She could have a little more tact as well, right?
Like, but those are like elvish teenage years.
Yeah, true.
She's better acting true. Out.
Well, also, though, I don't know what it's like to be immortal. I might just be the most arrogant prick ever in 8,000 years.
Like, shut the fuck. I'm going to take a shit and you'll be dead by the time I get back.
I don't have any time for this. I'm taking one of your boats. I'm going to fight your whole fucking army. And, you know, like, that's just the way she is. And I'm maybe not do that.
Yeah, but it makes me curious as to what exactly happened on Numenor to make them so anti-elf.
I know. I was disappointed we didn't get that. And that's what
just didn't show up to any of their weddings.
Yeah. Just like Elrond.
You are banished.
That's like this whole season. It's just people mad at elves. He's like, you didn't come to my mitzvah. I invited everyone. You're the only one who didn't come.
It's like Steve's point. Like we just keep getting these threads tugged upon.
Yeah.
And it leads to a separate thread. And there's like, there's no small meals. You know, like small solutions, small puzzles to be solved throughout to keep you like, I think a puzzle in a TV show should be made up of a bunch of tiny puzzles that get completed as you go along. Mm-hmm. Right. But this is just like another random piece. Like when you're doing an actual puzzle, what do you do, Steve? Corners first, borders, right?
Yeah, borders and corners.
Always border. This is like, there's a piece of the center. There's like the bottom left corner. It's driving me fucking nuts.
Here's a puzzle from last year you never finished.
Yeah, it's just a randomly different one.
And it's missing pieces because they don't have to own the fucking rights to it.
That's true. There's like cut up pieces of paper with like a smiley face. But Halbrand is clever. Like as soon as shit's about to go down, she's about to get imprisoned. He steps in like, hey, just give us 3 days. Then maybe think about giving us a boat instead of just saying no. And this being awkward. And he's got tact. Right. And a lot of the internet was under the impression and maybe still is. I don't know that is Sauron. Do we talk about Halbrand being Sauron?
I said that last week. Not
you
on the
did. That's right.
Yeah. I said that last week, not on the show. It was something I was editing last week's episode, and I had this thought like, oh, what if he's Sauron? I texted you guys.
That's right.
I threw it in the Streaming Things Discord at the time, and I don't, has that taken off as a theory online?
It has. A lot of people think Halbrand is Sauron because he's known as Sauron the Deceiver. So everyone expects him to present himself
as a
character at some point that we don't expect.
How fun of a plot twist would it be that Galadriel, the object that, or the person she's been looking for the whole time, has been right under her nose?
I would have loved that.
And then there's a part where like he's trying to be a smith for some reason in this town. I'm like,
he wants to make that ring. He's a fire-ass smith.
Everybody knows.
He wants to make that ring.
I actually think.
Y'all making jewelry here?
Yeah. I actually think your theory is still very much alive.
I think so too.
Even with what we learn about in this episode, when not more so.
When he said that, I'm like, yeah, you are the rightful king of soon to be Mordor. Buddy, I'm on to you.
Yeah, you're not.
I'm on to you, buddy.
You're not tricking Steve. Not even beardless Steve will be fooled by your wiles.
If he was like, hey, Steve, I know you think I'm shifty and I'm not trustworthy, but let me buy you a round. Round's on me. I'm like, fuck you, buddy.
How'd you get money? Stay away from my Gilcrest.
Stay away from my Gilcrest. I earned it. I put it on my, it's on my little pin. I put it on my shoulder.
It's on your breast. You can say it, Steve.
It's on my breast.
he didn't want to say it.
Oh my God. I said it.
So Halbrand's clever. And then that's when Galadriel gets upset. Like, no, I'm stealing a boat. I'm killing like literally all 10,000 people here and I'm leaving. And he's like, look, man, the Southlands will be there in 3 days. She said, yeah, but will it's people. So she's trying to impress upon him that there's many thousands, if not, I don't know how many people populate Middle Earth. Millions. I don't know.
We don't know. They haven't done a census in an age.
That's not in the appendices. And he finally calms her down. There's some shit with the knife that I didn't understand. They focused on Elendil's knife, which might have been Galadriel's that he took from her while she was unconscious.
I think that's what it was.
And then are we supposed to surmise that Halbrand stole it as a pickpocket back for her?
Because he's shifty. You can't trust him.
Exactly. Sauron.
Yeah. He's a deceiver.
He's a deceiver.
Yep.
Ooh, I'm getting more and more convinced. And that's when we find out, in fact, if you didn't have captions on, this is when you find out that that guy that rescued them, his name is Elendil. And you might recognize that name as, I believe, like the High King of Numenor. And his son is Isildur.
That guy on the boat.
The one that should have been pushed by Elrond into the volcano and solved everything. That's not what happened.
Okay, and he's the one who kept the ring, right?
He did, yeah. The whole reason the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy happens is because Isildur was not yeeted into the volcano, as Don Marshall says.
He should have been.
If only he had remained a sea cadet.
Yep. He clearly didn't pass the trials.
No.
And then we cut to Isildur ship stuff. And it's just like this little pirate romp where they're like, they're roping ropes and doing, I don't know how to sail. So, drop the shits. I'll have you, Longshanks.
There's a dude who looks like Khal Drogo just talking about how the sea's always right.
Yeah.
And he's just like naming seamen. Can we just say,
again, I'm this guy. The sea is always right is the worst mantra I have ever heard in a fantasy show ever.
Really?
The sea is always right.
What about?
It's like the customer. Of the world.
What about nobody strays off path, nobody left behind?
I like that little ditty.
And what about like after the 50th time?
That's when it gets better. Yeah, okay. It's like a joke when you commit to the bit.
Okay, so you're saying is they needed to say the sea is always right 25 more times and then you would have been back on board.
No, because there was no like second part to the refrain.
Oh,
so I'm saying like if they had just said nobody goes off the trail over and over.
Sea is always right. The sea doesn't come in on Sundays.
The sea is always right. At
Chick-fil-A?
In the day and in the night, something like that.
In the day and in the night.
Then I'd be like, all right, it's catching on.
There we go. The sea is always right in the day and in the night.
They just cut that part out.
We're picking up so many more listeners on this one. And then he's excited to see Isildur. It looks like he's excited to see his sister, but no, he's excited to see his horse. And I didn't write the horse's name down, but the sister,
Shadowfax.
I didn't learn this. Show us the meaning of haste. Her name is Aerion, I think.
Yeah.
Aerion.
Yeah. Aerion. Something like that.
I didn't learn her name until the end of the episode. That is Isildur's sister.
Her name has like at least six umlauts and dashes above vowels.
Aerion. And then we see, we cut back to Elendil and Queen Regent Muriel. And I keep saying Queen Regent because it's important to know, because obviously Isildur was the king. And so his father must have been king. And so how is she the queen? But she's the Queen Regent. And I believe that means that she's like the steward of the throne in the absence of the royal family. Mm-hmm. Correct? That's what a regent means.
Mm-hmm. Is it pronounced Regent? I always thought it was Regent.
Regent.
Whatever, guys.
I thought I was wrong. I've always said
Regent.
It is Regent, but I'm just saying you don't have to call me out on my shit all the time.
I thought I was learning something. I'm sorry.
I'll just stick to it next time. Like, no, you're wrong, Andy. It's Fawcett.
You know, you can mispronounce anything as long as you're just confident enough in your delivery. No one will question you.
Except all the emails that I got about Galadriel. That's why I'm so sensitive, because it's always me.
You piece of shit.
I was a lonely boy. I taught myself all these words, and I'm saying them aloud now, buddy. For the first time.
It's okay. We're all learning with together.
Fawcett.
What? Fawcett?
Listeners don't know that I thought facet was pronounced Fawcett, and you guys made fun of me because it was like a water spout thing. You don't remember that?
No, I completely
I'm like the
forgot.
Different faucets of her personality, and Andy's like twitching and...
I don't remember this.
You don't remember that?
You don't remember the faucet conversation?
When was that?
Oh,
you were the one that corrected
it. Yeah, you were the one that was like, I'm not going to let this just breeze by like that.
Yeah, Andy's letting it go. I'm like, hold on. We are not going to let Chris get away with this.
I have many faucets to my personality. I like how Steve forgot it, and I'm literally going to chip on my shoulder over it.
That shit keeps you awake at night.
That's
and I don't
how
even
life
think
works,
it.
Dude.
Queen Regent Muriel. and then we get this.
I'm so sorry.
I mean, you had to teach me how the fucking word was pronounced. We're talking to 50,000 people. Hey, but maybe next time off air, you know? No, never. Call me on my shit immediately. And we have this extended conversation where essentially Muriel's implying that Elendil's a traitor. His name means one who likes stars or some shit, but she's like, there's another translation. And yeah, the ancient Eldar tongue, which is Elven, I believe, it means elf friend. And she's like, and are you an elf friend? You friendly elf boy? And
if he was a real friend, they would call him Melon.
Melon. Melon.
Melon.
Yeah. Ever since we found out how to spell Melon, and it's I just cannot help but think of Gandalf going Melon. Speak friend and enter Melon.
And there's this weird little scene where I guess that sword that was given to him. At the end of this scene was the promotion that he talks about with his kids.
To captain.
It wasn't like, because I thought what she was saying is, I'm going to need you to stab her.
That's what I thought.
I think that's supposed to be implied.
With this sword specifically.
What if, like, because she was so vague in her instruction, that is what she meant? But he's like, well, I guess I got a garter.
I got a promotion.
Kids.
Much more comedic. He stabs her. And she's like, what did you do?
No,
you're supposed to give her. This was her sword 2000 years ago.
Oh,
shit.
My bad.
Melon.
You can't just say that whenever. So how do you get out of it? Anon. Melon. And then we cut back to the orc in, you know, the internment camp of the elves. The orcs forgot their sunblock. They get very upset when they wander out into the rays of sunshine. They're searching for something is what one of the elves says. So they're not just digging is what the implication is. They're not just digging these tunnels to get around. They're also specifically searching for something. What that is, we do not know. Correct.
The Nobody bottom of the tree.
The bottom of the tree is one. Mm-hmm. Andy's got a guess. Steve, you got a guess?
The Legolas card mentioned earlier in the episode.
You knew the
it's worth a lot of money now.
The jewel that Prince Durin's dad,
the Arkenstone.
The Arkenstone. Was that Sean Connery?
Yes.
Kiki, rattle your dags. Rattle your dags.
Oh, damn it. We have to rattle our dags.
So, yeah, they're searching for something. The elves speculate. They don't want to cut the tree down. There's a whole hullabaloo about cutting the tree down. That's where the guy decides. That's the hill the guy decides to die on.
Well, the one guy also mentions, like, they have a leader. His name is Adar. This is when we first hear Adar's
name.
Yes,
and Adar is an elvish word. Mm-hmm. It's not the first time.
That's at the opening of the episode. They say, take him
to
Adar.
The guy's in his.
Oh, yeah, that's
take
right.
Him
that's
to
right.
Adar.
Yeah. And but he's saying like they like this Adar. They revere him as if orcs are capable of doing such thing.
Yeah. Such things. If they have that faucet to their personality. Yes. So Adar is could it be Sauron? We don't know, because they talk about the elves speculate that it might be Sauron because they talk about how there's a successor to Morgoth, because Morgoth's definitely gone, blah, blah, blah. Right. But Adar is an elvish word. I believe it means father. I'm not going to stake my life to that, but that's what I believe the translation is. And then they won't cut the tree down. The orc names, by the way, did you catch them? It's Vrath, Lurka, and Magrot.
Magrot is awesome.
He's like the little sergeant, right? The one that does the water throat cut trick.
Yeah.
And like this scene could have been so cool and it was good, but it could have been great if he had come out and it was like a minute and a half, 2 minutes shorter. Like, I don't know why they lingered on every sip. Like you get a couple sips, you've like horribly slit the guy's throat, right? Done. We don't even know who that is. So you don't need to linger. There's no, like you're trying to make a Boromir moment out of this.
Slow-mo and he's crying and stuff.
You don't need to make a Boromir moment. We don't fucking know who that is. Just like shock us in general. Like, that would have been cool.
Yeah. My notes literally say, oh no, that guy.
And I will tell you this, like every time an elf dies, this is just me. I am infinitely more sad because to me it's like, because like, you know, when a young person dies, it's generally, sadder than when like the Queen of England dies and she's 100 or whatever, just because it's like, oh, they had so much more life left to live. Mm-hmm. So in an elf situation, they have literally infinite more life left to live.
They totally could have cured cancer.
Like when the guy, oh, I forgot his name. That's how fucking egregious that this is. Aragorn's really good elf friend.
Haldir.
Haldir at Helm's Deep. That is destruction of my heart because I'm like, dude, he'd have lived for... ever.
He was just trying to do you a solid.
Exactly. If he hadn't come to help, he would live forever. And so that's what makes that so sad. So this was kind of sad anyway. I don't even need to know who it is, but you kind of ruined it by lingering. And I'm like, I don't know who that is.
Not sad about it no more.
Yeah.
I was really expecting when he
cut his face off my TV,
when he cut the one dude's throat, I thought you were going to see like the water pour out of his throat before the blood. But it, you know, that's just maybe
it looked like a tiny little cut.
I did really like the way they did the cut though. Cause he was just, like the way that it went down, you know, how like if you accidentally cut yourself with a really sharp knife, you're did I cut myself? Oh shit. Yeah. And he was just kind of like, what happened? It kind of reminded me of a scene in the most recent scene of Barry where a dude gets stabbed and he was like, what did you do? And he doesn't realize that he's been stabbed for a while. It's crazy. But this
guy in his eye.
Yeah. Well, he was like, did you poke me in my eye?
Yeah, that was a good scene.
He had been stabbed like through the back of his head or something. It was nuts.
Yeah.
But anyway, spoilers for that. But
well, you don't know when. Could happen anytime.
Just like, I love the way it looked like a little nick that then started to bleed. Like the violence towards the end in this sequence was actually pretty wonderful. Just like the little grimace, like, well, did that happen? Oh shit. Yeah,
it totally did.
I'm going down.
Tell my mama lover.
Yeah. I thought the scene was really good. I mean, I agree.
I'm never going to see Valinor.
It would have been so much better if we really had any sort of emotional connection with that guy.
And since we don't, hurry past it, make it like, you know, the violence, the suddenness.
But I did like the tension leading up to that moment. Cause the, you know, there's that trusting, like, did you do something this water? And he's looking at the guy like, what's his name? Like Morat?
Magrot.
Magrot's gonna be like, it's peace. Like I was expecting him to say like, that was going to be the turn. Cause you can't trust these orcs, right?
What if he was like a really fancy orc and they sipped it and they're like, what? And he's like,
it's Grey Poupon.
It's seltzer water.
they made orc. I put the 1984 Chateau
Vanille. Oh, the French orc made. That's right.
You remember me as a character we created last episode?
I can't even keep our own characters straight.
Salut.
Salut.
Oh, no, sorry. That is just a regular boss.
Adieu.
But yeah, I love the tension of them not entrusting him. And he lets
two of them
drink before, like, because he lets them get comfortable. Like, oh, it is just water before.
Yeah, the two characters we know better drink first.
And then he goes, Nick Jashaven.
I know. What if he was just like, ow? And it was all it was.
He missed.
You keep fucking around. I'll cut you out of the cheek. Why are they Australian?
Is that Australian?
I don't know. I just do stuff.
Nice cone.
Nice cone. Did I do it? Me doing any accent is just a matter of not thinking about it too much because then I'll ruin it.
How long until it becomes Russian?
Oh, literally, probably any. Damn it.
Potato.
Potato. Vodka. Anyway, I'm going to cross that note out. It's mean. We cut back to Galadriel wandering Numenor. Mm-hmm. She's like hiding her ears. She's about to steal a boat is what we find out very quickly.
Yeah, but she gave her guards the slip.
Gave him the slip. And Elendil is just waiting on her. Like, hey, what's up? You trying to steal a boat? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, don't do that.
He's
like,
I would take that one, but
I was like,
You better not. Better not. I'll tell.
He was like, I'm going to burn this mother down.
I was like, you better not.
What if he was like, if you steal that boat, where will you go? She goes, home.
And he's like, oh my God, you know the secret word to convince me.
Oh, fuck.
I wonder what that word. Melon, let's go. Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. I'm so excited to be sponsored by BetterHelp because we here on Streaming Things have been big advocates of mental health and therapy for a long time, but we haven't known how to incorporate it into the show because it's something you have to be really responsible about. I'm actually in the mental health field and have been looking for a therapist for quite some time, but have been unable to find one. Every time I find a therapist that I connect with, they're either not accepting new patients or they're scheduling so far out, and my willingness to treat my mental health is so low that I just let it go by and don't think about it again for a while, because that's how my life is structured sometimes. I try to solve my own problems with my own mind, but when your mind is the problem, that's hard to do. So I'm so excited to be working with BetterHelp. BetterHelp is awesome. If you're thinking about giving therapy a try, it works perfectly. It's convenient. It's accessible. It's all online. It's very affordable. And they help pair you with a therapist that can suit your needs after filling out a brief survey. And you can switch therapists at any time. When you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/streamingthings. So he earns her trust.
I looked away instead of at the camera.
He earns her trust by speaking Elvish. And I learned from the captions that that dialect of Elvish is Quenya. And then there's a very unearned horse slow-mo.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Yeah, it's about a quarter day's ride to the Hall of Lore.
The Hall of Lore.
Shot at like 240 frames per second. It's like a freeze frame on this weird smile of Galadriel.
Yeah, you really like horses?
The slow-mo shots of her on the horse are legitimately gorgeous.
Gorgeous! The horse's flanks, the tassels, it's like a stripper horse.
Whatever camera that they used to film that, that is the footage they need to put on the camera's website that just kind of shows that this is what the
TX-1138
is capable of doing on the camera. But in the context of the show, all I could think of was Bane from Harley Quinn going, what are we doing?
Raji Daji.
What are we doing?
The streets will run with Raji Daji.
But yeah, because it is very like unneeded and it's just showing off the money that they have. And you know, like in the edit, like as an editor, again, these people make so much more money than me and they're way better than me as an editor. So it's like, why am I even putting my 2 cents forth? But I will. If I was an editor and I got this footage that's fucking gorgeous, it happens all the time. You have to shoot your darlings, as you say, Chris. Like, these are gorgeous shots. They should be seen. But this isn't the video for it. So I scrap a lot of shots all the time when I'm editing. And this is one of those ones where it's like, we don't need that. It adds nothing.
They're trying to sell this they're trying to sell this emotional moment for like, there's like six of these in this episode that is completely unearned. At what point are we like gradually led upon the path of knowing that Galadriel is craving land and riding a horse, right? Like, I guess we can assume because she's an elf, she's really loves nature. And but like this, like, did you say ride? Because she's been on an ocean for a while, right? Like, I'm putting it together after the fact, but this extended, like, there's no catharsis here that the slow-mo is demanding that I have. And I'm like, no.
No, sir.
I shan't.
Nay.
I just wish that was Shadowfax so he could show us the meaning of haste. I don't know who that horse is.
I forget the meaning of haste often, so I do. I like to call upon Shadowfax for his expertise.
The meaning of haste.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flame of Undern! So with, we cut back to Halbrand.
Sacred, not sacred.
We cut back to Halbrand, and he's claiming to be a blacksmith, which he might be Sauron, so he might be an amazing blacksmith.
Mm-hmm. I'm on to you.
But the guild won't let him. They won't let him bang no Norman Numenorean steel because he doesn't have
the... Gotta get your Boy Scout badge.
Mm-hmm. Guildbrand.
Gotta get your guild badge from the Boy Scouts.
Your parents have to sign the little book. You bring it back.
Yep.
You gotta get the patch.
You gotta at least participate in at least 4 pine car derbies.
You do.
If you forge their signature, we'll be able to tell.
So then he has to have a guardian. We cut to him just drinking in a bar. And he gets like some 4 or 5 Numenorean bullies nearby. Hey, you're hanging out. It's the guy hanging out with the elf.
Hey, Lowborn.
It's Lowman.
Lowman.
Yeah, who's actually a king.
Aren't they always? God, these movies ever taught me anything, is don't make fun of anyone who you think is beneath you, because A, they're a human being and you shouldn't do that anyway, but B, they're also most likely a much beloved leader. Yet returned.
Yeah. Strider. So they like, what are you called? He's like, none of your business. It's the whole thing. And then eventually he decides, you can see him like, I can kill all of them. You get the sense that like he could fucking murder everybody here effortlessly.
Yeah, because he's a dark wizard.
Exactly. Exactly. But then he's like, nah, better not. You better not. And he decides to buy them all around with money. I'm not sure how he has, because he doesn't even have like a real shirt on. Definitely doesn't have pockets.
Well, I feel like the queen gave him and Galadriel
an allowance,
a daily stipend. Like if you are a guest here, you're not a prisoner.
Cash.
Here's your petty cash for the day. And he spent it all on the bar.
Now he's going to be hungry.
Like you do.
Mm-hmm. He's going to be hungry. Yeah. Like Andy does.
Andy, are you a Dark Lord?
Maybe.
So this is all a ruse, though. He tried to steal the guy's guild crest and they catch him, calls him a low man again. They fight, beats the dog shit out of all of them. A little more violent than I expected this show to be.
Yeah.
In that scene where they snap dude's wrist and stuff and crunch his face against the wall.
His bone through his skin.
There was lots of blood squirting at the screen.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah. Looked better than the pig blood.
Dude went for an uppercut right away. Steve pointed out.
Like, oh, yeah. That's a weird first punch.
Yeah. Like that's when you go to like finish somebody in Mortal Kombat, you do the uppercut, because then maybe the stage fatality will initiate. But
or if
like,
you're a cheapskate and you just stay there crouched and wait to get the uppercut. Yeah.
You know? That's when you're Johnny Cage. You just do that over and over and over. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. Mm-hmm.
When, now we know your game.
Liu Kang, it's leg sweeps.
Liu Kang is web sweep? Leg sweeps?
Yeah, and if you get far enough away
bicycle
from
kick.
Yeah, if you try to stay away from me, you're getting bicycle kicked, brah. Don't block that shit. You better not. I'll get annoyed.
But he gets captured.
He does. He gets arrested by the guards, and we cut back to the Hall of Lore, which we found out was built or established by Elros, which I was really confused and angry for a second. And then I realized from the painting that looks dead on him, that's Elrond's brother. Because she's like, I was closer to his brother. Look at Elrond's picture. So Elros is Elrond's brother, and he made the Hall of Lore. I didn't understand what she was there looking for, to be honest with you.
I don't know if they said. She was just like, oh, shit, you got a library? Let's go.
I love libraries.
I thought she just really liked lore.
And horses. Mm-hmm.
She's an equestrian lore finder.
You could mix my 2 favorite things together. It'd be called Lorses.
I have not had this much fun in so long.
In 1,000 years since I've seen a scroll.
I've been swimming for about 60 weeks. Oh my God, you've got those racks that have like 7 to 10 unmarked scrolls in them per little section.
Is that a first edition Harry Potter?
I always wonder this about scrolls. How do they work? Like, are they like, I need about 1,000 feet of
scroll.
Parchment. And hopefully I don't run out of room.
Yeah, what do you do when you run out?
So I think.
Do you tape them?
The scroll is made to order. So you use parchment for the words. And then depending on how many parchments lined up lengthwise, that length is how much scroll you would need. You'd make that out of like maybe leather or really thin rawhide or something.
So this is medieval version of 240 characters?
Mm. Correct.
Okay.
It's the Hall of Tweets. Take me to the Hall of Tweets. Oh, this one's hilarious. Oh,
this one's funny.
Did you say Tesla?
This is when everyone was hashtagging Coney.
So I don't know what she's looking for. I'm sorry for all the humor, but I'm confused. But she does find out that.
Oh, shit. This is really important to my plot.
Yeah. Sauron's sigil is actually the map of the Southlands. So that the sigil that he was leaving everywhere was actually telling all of his evil brethren to meet him in the South, of course, where they could establish their stronghold in the event of Morgoth's death. And there's a little bit of a exposition about the High King of Numenor is in exile. You guys caught that. I was like, what, who was in exile?
Because he's a friend. He is a true elf friend.
Mm-hmm. And he's a real melon.
And so Queen Muriel.
He's a real melon.
Yeah, he's a real melon. The Queen Regent Muriel's father is probably the one that like hated elves and started all this shit I'm getting. Because they made some allusion at one point to her father, like, we do not want the black cloud of your father to settle upon us once more. And then she goes to tell him the elves are back at one point. Mm. So that's what I'm picking up. And then for the listeners that are as equally confused as I am, Queen Regent Muriel has taken control of Numenor, or her father did, the other kings in exile, because they hate the elves and they have started the anti-elf propaganda. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
As long as they're all on the same page.
That's what I gathered from it as well.
And then we cut back to the Harfoots, and I was really confused at first because I didn't know they were the Harfoots for a second because they were all wearing those like ceremonial grass skirts and stuff.
Halloween masks.
This
scene
starts off super artsy. Like, I actually really like these shots. I thought they were gorgeously filmed.
Dude, everything is so beautiful. I can't stress that enough.
I didn't understand what it was at first. Like, it almost looked like the beginning of like a really whimsical A24 film. Mm.
Yes, because it starts off with just the trees.
Swiss Army Man 2.
Yeah, and then luckily we get Sadok, who's going, nobody goes off the trail.
And nobody walks alone. Nobody goes off the trail. And nobody walks alone. See, it kind of slaps eventually, Andy. Yeah. Nobody goes. So that's their thing. And this is where we learn about the Harfoot. This is the coolest part of the episode to me. We learn about the Harfoot culture, and it is actually quite fucking savage.
Yeah, dude, it's straight up Oregon Trail.
Yeah,
straight up.
Is that how Oregon Trail works? You gotta leave them behind.
You gotta left behind.
So let's get
at one point.
You got dysentery.
We remember.
You stay behind.
We remember Appleseed, Elf Jack. Died of dysentery.
Yeah, he's just reading off a list of everybody. So if you fall behind the caravan, they just leave you.
Yeah.
And then he's just reading off a list of everybody they've left, which includes Poppy's entire fucking family.
Yeah.
Did you guys catch that?
Yeah. She was the one that the landslide, right?
Well, he's like Paul Brandyfoot, Steve Brandyfoot, Carl Brandyfoot, Jessica Brandyfoot. And I'm like, oh, God. Yeah. We left all those slow motherfuckers. She's like, we did. I left them too, I guess.
And Morgan Freeman for a second. Oh, these slow motherfuckers.
It was so sad because the first one is like, I forget what happened, like died, like fell off the trail, and then landslide.
Wolves.
And then he keeps going. He keeps going, and at one point he's like, Macaulay Culkin, bees.
Everybody laughs like,
that's fucking, like, and he got killed by bees.
He said that. He's like, he was an idiot, but I loved him. He's like, damn.
Like, that was a terrible, horrible death. If he was allergic, then he fucking suffocated. If he wasn't allergic, then he just got stung a lot.
This was so bizarre because up until this point, like, the Harfoots are like, oh, they're just adorable little Harfoots. They like eating and being hobbits, basically. And then all of a sudden, there's like, yeah, we fucking leave people. And then after the fact, we drink to their memory and say, we won't leave you behind.
Yeah.
Except we totes did. Especially that dude who, again, was killed by bees.
No, Chris pointed out, they're like, their cheer is like, we will wait for you, or we're waiting for you, or something.
Yeah, we're waiting for you, like, now.
It's like, nah.
Once we get to where you're dead and we're at the new place, then we wait.
We didn't wait very long.
We don't wait.
It's like
also,
5 minutes.
This whole scene, the way it's set up.
We wait at the finish line is what it is.
We'll see you in heaven.
Yeah, when you get here, we'll see you, but I mean, you're dead.
And this whole scene is set up. I think it's intentional that it's supposed to be reminiscent of Bilbo's birthday party. In my opinion, I think it's 100% supposed to give you those vibes because he goes up to the podium and he's like, 111th birthday. He doesn't say that, but he does. Like, he cracks a couple jokes.
You got killed by bees.
And then there's like the Harfeet guy in the crowd that says something, and like, it's the same vibe, and they're doing it on purpose. Like, this is the closest we can get you guys. And we know you love this shit. You love kooky little hobbits. That's what you love.
Kooky little hobbits.
You know you love them. We also find out some exposition about, at least that I don't recall knowing about Nori. Her dad's still hurt. Well, we knew he had a broken ankle. Her mom was Rose, and she died. Did we learn that before?
No, I don't think so.
And he is with Marigold now. He's banging Marigold. Mm-hmm. Rose is dead, and Rose was Nori's mom. And then there's a little bit of back and forth between Poppy and Nori, where she talks about, you know, her still willingness to help the stranger. Poppy still doesn't want to do it.
Yeah,
she accidentally murdered Fireflies.
There's common sense and nonsense.
I love that.
Nori.
That was actually nice. Some of the dialogue's brilliant in this show.
I did like that because Nori starts it off by saying,
she said there's head sense and there's heart sense.
Like, yeah, really kind of like flowery super language. Earnest-y. And then Poppy's like, no, common sense and nonsense.
Yeah.
Don't dust it up however you want, girl.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
This is some bullshit. I love that back and forth. I agree with you. But ultimately, like, she blackmails her into helping her help the stranger. And so he wants to go steal Sadok's like star pages. And she does. But then the stranger wanders up to like use the light of the fire to read the map. Sets the map on fire. Bumbles around like a fucking Home Alone movie.
Home Alone.
And then falls into the thing.
I'm on fire now.
They get busted. Nori gets busted. And everybody says, the laws of the Harfoot say that because she lied and brought in an outsider, the decree is that she must be de-caravanned.
De-caravanned.
Damn.
What an interesting turn of phrase.
Not allowed to follow the Yameeners.
You've been de-caravanned.
Yep. But then they say, she's young. So what they're going to do is stay at the back of the caravan,
which is basically a death sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, especially because her dad's ankle's broken. And he's like, don't worry. I got a plan. We're going to stay at the front of the caravan. I don't know. He's not. That's not how he talks, but that's how I hear it.
Mm-hmm. I assume his goal is because he's in front and he can
slow everybody down.
Yeah, by the time he slows down.
He can slow everyone else down, but also people will probably help him because he's slowing everyone down.
And he's got much longer before he's not with the crew anymore. He'll just gradually be more toward the middle.
Yeah.
And you can hear him in the background, like, you're talking about the middle of the back. And it's kind of Pippin-ish.
No, I mean the back.
The back.
That's what I said.
Baby's got back. That's where you'll be.
I mean, they're honestly lucky
the
that
caboose.
Sadok is calling the shots here.
The rear end.
Malva is like an ice cold queen. You know what I'm saying? She's like, oh, looks like we're going to de-caravan you just because Nori likes this tall guy. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that caravan you had, you ain't got it now.
You've been deed.
And Marigold is none too pleased about this. She's very upset. You basically killed our whole family all because you think you're special. You're definitely not fucking special. You're a dork. Nobody's ever liked you. That's why your mom's dead. And I was like, damn, Marigold. I may have heard that wrong.
She didn't say that last part.
I was dealing with my own shit. She was really mean to Nori, and I like Nori a lot. So that's
I don't know if it was mean. She was just being very stern.
She's upset.
Because I forget what Nori says, but she says something like, he deserves our help or something. And she said, sweet child, you mean well. Like she says, she's not being
mean. She implies that it's her destiny. Like he chose us for a reason or something like that. And Mary's like, definitely not. Super random. Shit be happening.
There's one quick aside is I did like how I forget. I think it's Nori's father who's like now Sadok. It is a pretty extraordinary tale that Nori's telling us. And Sadok's like, well, I've heard about men going to the stars.
Mm-hmm.
Just never heard of them falling back down from them. I just thought that was kind of cute and funny.
Well, I don't even think it was supposed to be cute and funny. I wrote it down in my second breakfast. I meant to Google it. I bet that's a deep lore.
Oh, I'm sure thing. It is. But just the way he kind of says it, like, I never thought that you characters could come back from the stars. They're going to. Hell yeah.
Yeah, Sadok's character is awesome. I think he's great.
Yeah. He's one of the better parts of the show for me, at least.
I enjoy him.
We cut back to Galadriel. She's still with Elendil and Isildur. And we find out that Galadriel's, or is that how you pronounce it? It's Galadriel.
Galadriel?
She's famous. She's the Scourge of the Orcs in this part of Numenor, which I thought was neat. She's a bad motherfucker. And then I wrote Amarion.
She's like Achilles, but still alive, like in 2022. You know what I mean? Like, oh shit.
Homer's like taking notes right now. Scourge of the Orcs. And Anarion is Isildur's brother, I think.
Yes.
And okay, so there's this whole back and forth. Basically, Isildur wants to take a gap year. He's
like, I want to go to Europe.
Yeah, I'm going to backpack across Middle Earth.
Myself.
I'm going to go to Casa Dune, maybe get a little tipsy with the dwarf ladies. And he's like, what? No, you're going to take your boat test.
Your family members from the north are coming to cheer you on.
Yeah. What do you mean? I invited the whole family. And so they have an argument about it. We find out that Eärion, his sister, has been accepted into the Building Guild, which is apparently something she wanted.
Good for her.
The whole royal family we're getting acquainted with. Mm-hmm. We cut to Halbrand is in jail. There's a really funny, I like the relationship that Galadriel and Halbrand have. She walks up like, oh, keeping the peace, huh? You know, yeah. I had a dope ass time and you thought I was going to get in trouble. Now look at you. It's just funny.
I do wish there was maybe, and it's weird because we're like, oh, they're not getting to the point enough. But I feel like they've kind of gone from adversarial, like unwilling companions on the one rickety piece of driftwood in the ocean to all of a sudden cracking jokes like, ah, keeping the peace, are we, my good friend?
Yeah.
Halbrand, probably Sauron.
That's why when he's, yeah, not fooling him, buddy.
not the whole time, like, Galadriel, maybe you should just keep him there because he is what you call a dark lord.
That's what you call it.
Yeah.
He's what you call a dark lord. That's what we call him, my neck of the woods.
His mind is full of malcontent.
Mm-hmm. 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 You better forge some rings.
Yep.
This is where we find out he's the king of the Southlands. Mm-hmm. I don't know what those people are, but, and he's like, yeah, I'm the king of the people that worked for Morgoth. She's like, yeah, but the elves did some shit too. And that's her whole argument. Like in both, what's the word? Redeem.
Yeah, she's like, we started this war, which
isn't really true.
I was confused. I'm like, I didn't think you had.
I don't think that's true.
Last time I remembered, dude straight up turned your tree lights off.
He did.
And you got all
like
mad.
My dad one year when he got all crazy and threw the Christmas tree out the window.
And then he was like, it's your fault.
No, he wasn't that kind, but it was a sad Christmas.
I was yes anding a potential joke and unfortunately I'm telling you a real story. The emotional rake.
I'm over it.
Apologies.
Muriel hates elves. That's when she's talking to her father and her father who's dead, I presume, right? She's talking like the mausoleum of her father, like the elves are back. We cut back to the caravan. They immediately leave behind Nori and her whole family. Like they didn't last 3 seconds. They're like, all right, guys, let's go. Dude. Nobody leaves the train. Bye. Because he's got a broken leg.
We'll wait for you at the finish line.
Yeah, we'll talk about you at the next fire. Bye. And then they adopted a little kid because he was super slow.
Who the fuck was that kid?
What if the scene cut too early and what really happened is the kid was like, can we keep him? And the mom was like, who the fuck are you? He's not even a Harfoot.
This kid's just trying to gaslight his way into a family. What do you think, mom?
If I act like I'm really involved in this, I'll make them think they're dumb and they forgot their other kid.
He's straight up like Donnie from the Wild Thornberries.
I 100% thought so. They're trying to pull up the cart and her dad's having trouble because his leg's broken and they're trying to like, what do we do? And you see like the cart rustling and it looks for a second like something's underneath it. And I thought the stranger was going to lift.
So did I.
Lift up and have like the cart on his shoulders like he's some like Atlas holding up the world, you know?
Yeah.
But you know,
he just peeks out like, hello.
He just peeks out from the side like, huh?
What if it was Celebrimbor and he went, hello.
I would be like, fuck yes. The stories are finally converging. Celebrimbor is the key.
And it was Celebrimbor on the other side. Tell me, where is Gandalf? I would very much, oh, he's not existing yet. Okay. So the stranger pops up. He says, friend. And everybody's like, oh, yay. Which I assume he's
says
gonna,
melon.
He's going, hey, I'm a melon. He's going to pull the cart.
And Nori's like, if we help him, he'll help us, you know, like a society.
I'm kind of awestruck that, yeah, three episodes in, we still don't know who the stranger is.
Like, and the stranger has yet to actually do anything other than,
He's still in caveman mode. So here are the, do you guys know all the running theories?
Tell me about the wabbits.
Well, we've talked about him being Gandalf. We've talked about being Sauron. Mm-hmm. Sauron. Mm-hmm. Sauron.
He could also be Sauron. That's another possibility. Mm. Very unlikely.
Well, it is unlikely because we all know that's Halbrand.
Yeah.
Indeed. Well, yes. Well,
I'm going to hitch my wagon to this so hard.
I agree with you, but in the Silmarillion, there has been some talk of him, Sauron being sent to look like an envoy of the elves or something. So there's even a theory there's a theory that like High King Gil-galad is potentially Sauron, which is why he's sending them all to Valinor and stuff. So it could be most likely Gandalf, unless that's a red herring. And then it's Sauron. But neither of those wizards are supposed to be in human form in the Second Age, I'm pretty sure. Mm. So it's, there were two wizards in the Second Age. We don't learn much about them. And there's a couple lines in the text, but they're blue wizards.
Was Radagast one of them?
No, there's Radagast, Saruman, Gandalf, and then apparently two other ones that I don't know about.
Clyde. They're both Cynthia.
They're called blue wizards.
Cynthia's my favorite.
Isn't Radagast the brown?
Yeah, he's the brown.
So there's white, gray, brown, and then two blue boys.
Gandalf.
Cyan.
What if they show up and it's like, I'm blue, Abadia. Sorry.
They just look like two members of the Blue Man Group.
That'd be amazing.
Like the black turtlenecks and the blobs.
So canonically, it might be one of them. I think it's more likely to be Gandalf. But yeah, they also think it could be Tom Bombadil.
Yes, please.
Andy says that every time we have a question, like, who's that? And Andy's always like, it's Tom Bombadil.
Andy fucks with Tom Bombadil so heavy.
He's got the coolest name.
He does. Mr. Bombadil.
He can turn into a bear.
Can it be Tom Bombadil?
No, I don't think so.
I think it can. I think he lives a long time.
Does he? I'm so unfamiliar. Like, I know the name a lot, but I didn't think he was around this time period. But I don't know so much. I'm not super steeped in the lore of Lord of the Rings.
You're a lore steeper. We need to go to the lore of the Hall of Lore.
Hall of Lore, yeah.
That's what we need to do. How long has Tom Bombadil been alive? A mysterious being, Tom lived in the depths of the old forest close to the Barrow Downs. That didn't tell me shit. Is Tom Bombadil immortal? Proclaimed to be the oldest in existence, Tom Bombadil was apparently immortal and possesses a range of enigmatic powers, able to give full control over his domains.
Oh, my God.
So, yes, it could very well be Tom Bombadil.
He might show up.
Yeah.
Maybe he's Adar.
Adar. yeah. So then the we cut back to the elves and they make a go of it. It was the note that I took. I don't know why I'm getting so British in my notes. They make a go of it.
Are you taking the piss?
Why did I give it a David Attenborough flair? They make a go of it. And as you see here, the elves are about to fail.
Arondir and his nameless companions make it their quest to escape the prison they find them shackled in.
I can't talk now.
That was amazing. There was a part where we were and his nameless companions. We were watching the show and it cut to one of those map. You know, segues, which is really handy and very necessary where it shows geographically where the next scene's going to be.
Yeah.
And Steve just in the background did like an Adam West. Meanwhile, in the Southland,
the Justice League narrator.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, at the Southland.
So that took me out of it for a minute.
I'm glad I can ruin this show for you while we watch it.
And then I get upset again because there's like the really cool fight. I like a lot of the shit that's going on, the flipping with the chains. And then they're like, they're actually beating the orcs because Arondir like jumps up with an axe. He cuts some of his chains off. His first buddy gets like hatcheted in the back immediately. He's like the dork of the crew. Like, you're barely even an elf. And then
look at those little nubs.
Yeah.
Call his ears.
Kind of pointy ears. And then
micro nubs.
They cut the what is it? Like the rags that are covering the sunlight of the tunnels.
Oh, yeah.
Cut those down. And the orcs are like, and right before they're about to be defeated, he's like, "Borg." And I'm like, oh, what's a warg? This is going to be fire.
Oh, you don't remember the warg?
Exactly. Wargs? They're just the things that the orcs rode to battle.
Yeah. You didn't know that's what they were called?
They were called wargs. I don't recall. It doesn't matter.
Dude, call the wargs, I got excited. Because I'm like, oh, yeah, it's this gnarly ass hyena dog horse.
It was people. Just one.
And it was one. And not only was it one, it was like if you took a pug.
If you took Ren from Ren and Stimpy, put his face on.
If you took Ren and Stimpy, interbreeded them, and then had that offspring interbreed with several incestual children, and then breed it with a warg, you'd have this thing, and then cut it like a poodle.
Oh, gotta shave it a little bit.
But you got that little tuft of hair around its neck.
Oh, you gotta have a little skirt.
This thing was the ugliest looking of all ugly looking warg.
It looked
dogs.
Like because of the little horns that it might have been the wolf, quote unquote. That was near the Harfoots when they were picking the berries. Do you think
it could be?
Oh yeah, what the fuck happened to that?
Eh, it just didn't. Just don't go pick berries.
Just didn't pan out my bet.
I'm just guarding my berries. That's how he talks.
You get my berries.
Yeah,
hey.
Yeah, that's right. You walk away. Don't take my berries.
Hey, I'm wolfing here.
I'm wolfing. Nice.
But this thing was so ugly and hideous, but I kind of liked it because it just was, it made it more horrifying. Like when he has it trapped behind the tree trunk and it's like sticking its face through and it just looks all like stupid and gross.
Yeah, that was cool with the chain or using the fulcrum. There was some physics at play there. Mm-hmm.
I love the violence of it too. When the first woman like grabs a spear, she's like, all right, let's go. And then like inevitably that happens when like the big monster beast comes out and somebody's like, I'm gonna kill it. They die right away. But like it knocked her down and she was like, yeah. But then it just like
it chewed on her.
It just like gnawed on her stomach and like tore away a little bit as it like moved on to something else. I was like, fuck.
Again, like, yeah, it, I didn't like expect
it,
that.
It, it was pretty gnarly.
Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of it was really cool. Mm-hmm. Like it was actually really sad when the guy successfully gets away, like his medoc or whatever, his the boss,
the warden master.
And then he just spread. Andy was like, go.
Cause he was the shot is him standing, in the field. And Andy was like, why aren't you running?
And he turns around and he's got an arrow in his chest. Who shot that arrow?
That's true. Cause the other arrow comes from behind him.
I'm so confused. Like
maybe he got shot and
blocking.
Then
it's just the blocking. It's a tiny thing. I assume it's an orc, but I'm like, from where? Because they don't like the sun. They can't be up there.
Right. Well, that's true. Well, he definitely gets shot from behind the second time. So the arrow in front of him doesn't quite make sense unless he
correct.
Turned around, got shot, and then was like, no, I can still make it. Actually, this really hurts.
Look at them trees.
Fuck. I got to dramatically turn and make a point to Aaron Deere like, this
oh,
sucks.
So you're saying the only way that makes sense is if he turned behind, like he went.
Like he was going to help Aaron.
Is Aaron Deere coming? Got shot and was like, oh, I better not wait on him. This sucks.
And then got a couple feet and thought like, no, I'm not going to make it.
Taking the view for a second. Is he looking yet?
I'm actually not going to make it. That's funny.
But I thought the scene was rad. It compared to like everything else that happens in this episode where a lot of it is just kind of like, blah, whatever. I'd really like, I know Isildur is like super important to the story overall of Lord of the Rings, but like everything within Isildur, like, I don't care about what is going on right now. Get off this boat. I'm tired of being on boats.
Let that fucking guy drown.
Exactly.
Move on.
There's so much where they want you to just like languish in the world that you've missed for 20 years. And I also have missed plot, you know?
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
However, the fight with the orcs, you're right, is awesome. I have it as my one and only old Toby. For the first time in our show's history, I was like,
you're doing a one and done?
How do I make stuff up?
I mean, that's what I usually do.
Andy,
I'm begging you to watch the series.
There are so many truth bombs coming out this episode. Chris is like, I didn't have a list. And he's like, I've never had a list.
Damn. Is anyone shocked?
Well, I have a list.
Yeah.
And we should say the show ends with him being brought. Aaron Deere is about to be killed. And they're like, don't kill him. Take him to Adar. And they bring him to Adar, who's like kind of blurry. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Looks kind of like a Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, this is
what if it's Elrond from the future.
Tom Bombadil.
this is like a shot from Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead. Is that what it's called? The Vegas?
Yes.
Yeah. You know how like everything was out of focus in that fucking movie? That was 100% this shot at the end. I was like, I'm having flashbacks to last summer.
Nothing but sun flares. That brings us to our second breakfast segment where we talk about some tidbits, some lore bits that we found. Anybody have any?
I thought of one thing when we saw Elendil's name and I was like, that sounds familiar, not just for Isildur's father, but also that is the gift that Galadriel gives to Frodo. I give you the light of Elendil, our brightest star.
Oh, because his name means something of the stars.
Something stars, yeah.
Wow, good pull, Andy. Yeah,
so apparently they homies.
That's the one that Frodo ends up using with Shelob, right? Mm-hmm. Nice. Yep. Nice.
I got big Two Towers vibes in the Orc Water scene where they're like, here, you earned a water break.
You look a little thirsty.
But I got Two Towers vibes where and what I totally thought was going to happen is that it was going to be grog like the orc water that they drink, and they go, oh, he can't handle this grog, when they feed it to Mary.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
like, stop it, leave him alone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought that they were doing that again. So I that felt like that scene to me. So I don't know. I'm going to throw that in my old Toby's. And then
second breakfast
And then when Nori, was, talking about, if we're not, if we don't have friends or whatever, what are we even living for? I got big, vibes of there's good in this world and it's worth fighting for. Like the way that she delivered the speech and the way it was written reminded me a lot of that.
Of Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
What about you, Steve? You got anything?
Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but that one guy's name is Isildur.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's the character.
That's the King of Man.
Yeah, it's the King of Man. He didn't throw the ring in the volcano like he should.
Mm.
But apparently he should have been boating this whole time.
That's true.
Think of this. None of Lord of the Rings, not the Fellowship of the Ring, the Two Towers, Return of the King, none of this would have happened if Kid didn't go on his, what did you call it? Gap year.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't know what he chooses to do. Maybe it's because he doesn't take a gap year that leads him to the path of royalty.
Whatever. We're watching history in the making. Right,
literally, that's the point of a prequel.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm now realizing that.
This is blowing my mind. I've got a few. I glossed over it earlier, so hopefully the listeners that were angry about that stuck around. The tree that they linger on when right before the scene of Elendil and Miriel, where she gives him the sword. The tree that's outside on the balcony, that is the white tree, a sapling of which is taken to form the white tree of Gondor.
Okay.
And when Gondor calls for aid,
Rohan will answer.
Exactly. I don't know how that's relevant particularly, but I do know that to be the case.
I wonder if it's the same sapling that Elrond provided. Is it the same tree? It's like cousins.
That sounds tree weird. Cousins. I wonder if that's the same sapling that Elrond provided.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
I paid for a premium sample.
And again, I think the Sadog knowing someone who's turned into a star is a lore reference. I wish I had looked that up. People would have loved that. That's all I got, though. That's all I got. That all brings us to the end of our second breakfast segment and brings us on to our old Toby. Finest scenes in the South Farthing, where we talk about our three favorite moments of the episode. Steve, what is your number three?
My number three is the very beginning of the episode when Arondir finds himself in the prison camp. I just like the way it was shot, how he's being dragged through the tunnels and you see the orcs being really mean to citizens. And like, I don't know. A lot of my like for the scene really kind of just hinges on the fact that I really like the production design and art direction of the orcs and that little camp. I think it's a really interesting visual and I like where that's at. And honestly, it was the most interesting part of this whole episode was anytime they were there. But Andy, what about you?
My number three is Nori standing up for having friends. When she kind of stands up for herself, with, the group of people and everybody says, we don't need friends. We need to survive. You know, if we don't have friends, what are we surviving for? And, not just from the vibes that it gave me of Samwise, who is probably my favorite character in the Lord of the Rings. Because I think this was probably the most emotionally impactful moment of the entire episode. It was also one of the first times that I actually like kind of cared about Nori. So far she hasn't meant that much to me. Like she's been fine. But it's not Hobbiton and it's, you know, my favorite of all Lord of the Rings is like the first half of, Fellowship of the Ring. Just because I have so much fun in the Shire. And this is the first time where I felt that kind of feeling for the stand-in for hobbits in this, the Harfoots. So yeah, that one.
My number three is the Galadriel moment.
Oh, so we are making up numbers now, huh?
Well, I feel like I can't just be a dick.
Yeah, you can.
So I found some really small things that I liked. I kind of talked about it when we talked about it, right? My number three would be Galadriel, her moment with Halbrand when she comes back and he's in jail. Extremely small moment, but I was a big fan. Again, I love their relationship and their little dichotomy. And the fact that he's Sauron just makes it really sad later, right, Steve?
Right, yeah.
What's your number two?
Tragic.
My number two is Harfoot Fest. Did they call their little festival? Did it have a name? I didn't catch it.
I believe it was Burning Man.
Congo Line.
De-caravanning. Okay. No, I just like all the scene, like from the opening shot of, like I said, it looks like a whimsical A24 film, them dancing in the woods. I love the little fun, you know, we will not fall off the trail. And then all the way up to
nobody them, leaves the trail.
Well, yeah. All the way leading up to them remembering all the people that they left behind by bees.
Stupid fuck stung.
I know, it makes their one song null and void. It's like, nobody leaves the trail. Nobody walks alone unless they fall behind. Fuck them.
Yeah. I think it's nobody leaves the path, nobody left behind.
So if you leave the path, you get left behind because the contract has been null and void.
It's nobody walks alone.
Is it? Okay, I think I got it wrong.
They do walk alone if they fall behind. It's like, you guys are dicks.
I just like this scene because it really sort of subverts what I felt like we knew about the Harfoots. It adds a little bit of this moral grayness to them that I felt like was not there at all. Like,
yeah, they seem so innocent.
They're sweet, innocent little folk, you know? And now it's like, oh shit, they'll leave a motherfucker.
And they're cannibals.
In the name.
What if it got really dark?
That'd be amazing. Nobody walks alone because we put you in our tummy.
You're always with us.
Nobody walks alone or else we will eat you.
But yeah, that was my number two.
Andy, what is your number two?
Let's see. My number two was the attempted escape with Aaron Deere and his nameless friends. It was just, the action was sweet. The violence of the warg was dope. Seeing the wargs again. Also, I guess we should have talked about that in Second Breakfast. The wargs from Twin Towers as well.
Oh, yeah.
Two Towers.
That's what I meant. Sorry.
Number two is the Halbrand. I just loved Halbrand. The Halbrand fight where he beats up the Numenorean bullies.
Mm.
Just because of the sheer violence of it. I didn't see that coming.
No, man.
And again, there is that, like, 20% of me is pretty sure that that's Sauron. So I'm like, what is he going to do?
He's going to get out that giant mace and hit him and they'll be knocked back 50 yards.
Honestly, magic in at least the Peter Jackson movies was pretty, like, amorphous, nebulous, like thrusting the staffs at each other. And like, we know
that fight so much.
He whispers at a butterfly or moth. Sorry. And that's it. That's all we see, really. So flame of Undoon, but he doesn't flame no Undoons.
Yeah, he's not throwing. He's not going lightning bolt, exactly. Lightning bolt,
which is what I want. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what is he about to do? And nothing. He's just going to punch him. But still, it was very cool.
It was.
Steve, your number one favorite moment of Adar.
My number one, I feel like everyone's going to see it coming. It's the prison break at the end.
The prison break.
Andy talked a little bit about the choreography of the fight was really, really well done. The warg was super horrifying and scary and gross and ugly. And I love
the chain flipping too.
I still kind of want to
how they fought with their shackles.
They're like booping their noses by doing the sweet like twirl with the chain. Like, that was super creative. And then they do like the four man chopping at the chain in synchronization. Like, that's always cool. Whenever you see any sort of metallurgist doing that, where they're hammering something, but there's four of them, it always looks cool.
I watch so many metallurgists, and every time. Gosh,
it gets me. It really rattles my dags.
jiggles your dingleberries.
Yes,
yep,
it does.
Yep. And then with it ending and like the way it does, where they don't succeed, that, you know, that's always kind of an interesting thing when the villains end up winning. Mm-hmm. So yeah, number one, I think it was a really well choreographed action scene.
Yeah.
Andy?
My number one is when Sauron beats the blacksmith's ass.
Oh yeah, he was a blacksmith.
Mm-hmm. So it was a group of blacksmiths.
He's trying to take his little Boy Scout pin.
Just because of the random violence of it. And I felt like the actor that plays Halbrand or Sauron was really convincing. Is like, oh my God, please don't do this. And then like, don't do this because I know karate.
I'm secretly John Wick.
Right. So that was awesome. And I thought the choreography of the fight was pretty sweet. The main reason that it's my number one is because it surprised me with where this show is willing to go. And it makes me really, really excited for when we get some bigger, like, sword fight sequences later. Like, up to this point, we got like the fresco painting fight with Galadriel's brother. And then we got the troll. Everything else has not really been.
A violence ching ching
moment. But so when we do get that, I'm really excited for where they're going to be willing to go.
Charlie Vickers is the actor who plays Halbrand.
Well, Chuck crushed it.
And actually they have his credit as Sauron in IMDb.
Nice.
I'm just kidding.
Well, I was going to say, what? That seems like a pretty big spoiler.
You would have thought we'd be excited about that.
Andy was just like, nice.
I just deflated, like, dang, man, they spoiled it.
That was a joke. I did not. That's not what it says. It just says Halbrand. My number one is the same as Steve's. It's the fight with the prison break, as he put it. Way cooler way to put it. Which brings us to our one performance to rule them all. Your favorite performance of episode 3, Steve. Kick us off and take us home, baby.
Well, I want to get a honorable mention to Lloyd Owen. I'm going to do it. You can't tell me what to do. No, Lloyd Owen, who plays Elendil.
Okay.
I like that guy because that dude just looks like he belongs in a Lord of the Rings thing.
Yeah, he's doing really well.
And even though a lot of the stuff he was doing in his like B plot, especially with Isildur, was like, I don't give a shit. I still liked watching him.
He looks a lot like Aragorn's great, 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 great grandpa. Yeah. I think it plays well.
You know that whenever Aragorn has like the knight, he's actually knighted in Return of the King. He's got the blue kind of regalia on.
With a Dark Lord.
Not that one.
His beard is fuller.
His beard is fuller. He looks like this dude. Yeah, you're right. He looks like he could be related. But really, my one performance to rule them all, because there can only be one, is how are we pronouncing her name now? Morvith?
It's Morvith.
Morvith. Morvith Clark. This episode was the first episode I really felt like they gave her more to do other than I'm stern and angry.
Right.
Like you got to see a little bit of her being... having some levity and having some like honest, like
she loves horses.
She fucking,
oh dude, my goodness. Loves them. Oh my them.
Lord. Loves and if you've, them.
Anyone who's seen St. Maud, she's a phenomenal actress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they've only allowed her to be one thing.
Yes.
So just far
doggedly in pursuit of her goal.
Yeah. And this was the first episode where they allowed her to open up a little bit and really, I'm excited for the possibility of her doing more things and channeling more emotions and having more complex scenes with people.
Or if you're going to have her be a one note killer, have her kill some shit.
Right.
You know, not just piddle around in her nightie.
You know what I mean? What's wrong with piddling around?
I don't know. Rattling her dags, just walking around.
But those are my performances. Andy.
It did ruin that idiom. Andy.
Yeah. So my one performance through them all is the actress that plays Nori, Markella
Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh, which is like being named like Stacey Goebbels or something. It's pretty brutal.
I wish my name was Markella.
Is it Markella or Marcella?
It's a K.
Oh, it's a K. Okay. I don't have it written in front of me. Okay.
I'm with you, Andy. Yeah. Mine as well.
I thought that she, as I said in my discussion of our favorite moments, is the first time that I really got some like Hobbit that I care about vibes from the show. And it took three episodes, but it got there. And I thought that her performance was earnest and believable and inspiring. And that's what Hobbits should feel like, even if they are like kind of a more brutalistic version of them. I still want, you know, the morality, and not necessarily morality, but like I want the feels, and I got it here. And so I was happy about it.
I agree with you. I think there's a couple, mostly her dad, I don't even know his name. I think he does a great job. And I really like Sadok. You know, he's quirky.
Yeah.
I understand his function and like his stuff works for me, but Nori is truly remarkable. Like I do feel for her character on the level. Cause we don't have like, I like the Harfoots, but they're, and I swear it's not nostalgia because I love this movie. The very first time I saw it, like you were just immediately attached to Merry and Pippin. You know what I mean? Like you loved them. Mm-hmm. Pippin was fucking hilarious. Second Breakfast. Oh my God. That's a knee slapper, right? What about 11 Z's? Like, it's funny. We don't have any of that really. It's just a bunch of like, I see what you're trying to do, but Poppy could get eaten by the wolf picking berries. And I'd be like, meh. But Nori is doing a really like, it's connecting like Andy said. So absolutely. I love this world. I'm excited to keep pushing for, I think once we find out the stranger's identity, and I swear to God, it'll rattle my dags. If this is like an episode 8 finale, we find out who that is and you have to wait till we spend another $1 billion and get greenlit for season 2, I'm going to lose my shit. Like we got to find out who that is in episode 4 or 5. And
I've got some bad news for you, my friend. I'm not a betting man, but I bet that's exactly what's going to happen.
God, that's going to drive me nuts.
Based on the way that it's been spread out. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe episode 4, we might get Stranger's first words at this rate.
Oh, my God. You're right. I'm going to be upset. I don't know if we're covering Rings of Power 2.
This episode, he did say Nori.
And friend.
And friend. So yeah. He was like, Melon.
Melon. I think that's all the time we have for right now. But in a couple of days, we'll be watching House of the Dragon episode 4. And we've got a couple extra things coming out next week. So especially for our patrons, I did forget to mention you can follow us on Twitter at StreamThingPod. You can sign up for Patreon at patreon.com/streamingthings. And that's where you can join our Discord. And we have a bunch of rewards and benefits that we got to start recording this weekend for our patrons. Mm-hmm. So look forward to that kind of stuff. And but that's all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. Happy streaming. The new patron shout out. Thank you for your patronage.
You have a beautiful voice.
I don't think I do.
Aww. It's pretty good.
Don't be so hard on yourself, buddy.
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Would smash. Well, we're doing patron shout outs differently this time, guys. We're going to do them once a month, and this recording will last the entire month. But in this month, we will go over the new patrons that sign up for the month and also the patrons who upgraded their tiers that month as well. Mm. Are you excited to find out the cool people that did such a thing?
I'm very excited.
All right. So let me introduce to you our brand new patrons for the Try Before You Deny tier. It's Aaron Layton and Crystal Trujillo.
Woo! Hi, friends.
In the Marty P VIP tier, it's Josh and Anna.
Marty B.
What did I say?
Marty P.
Oh, Marty B. Excuse me. How fucking dare you? I've been here for how long and you don't know my name.
The entire time, sir.
You've given me a terrible wound.
What if Marty B's like a Marty P, man?
Well, our new chocolate pudding producers, we have Alex Fisher, Brittany Deck, Enver Psycho. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm surely not.
Probably not, man.
Jen L, Jess R, Mandy Spears, Shannon Myers, and Zach Suthers. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, friend.
Thanks, Puchachos.
And our final new patron in the Friends Don't Lie tier, we have Colin P. Frost. Thank you, Colleen.
Another P, man.
Thank you so much. Now we go into the upgrades.
That's the road less traveled, man.
These are the people that gave us money before, and we thought, hey, what about more money for these guys? Because they're just so giving and full of mirth.
Mirth,
all of it. These people upgraded to the Try Before You Deny tier.
Try Before You Deny, man.
Andrew Gray, Jen Robinson, Casey McCain, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate Kiki, and Will Nash. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
And then these people upgraded to the Marty B VIP section. Thank you, A. Wells, Adam Horn, Adam Raymond, R.K. Shenanigans, Barb, Caleb Jeter, Carmelita Valdez McCoy. I love saying your name fully, Carmelita, because it's so cool. Chloe Richardson, Cindy Miller Ray, Elizabeth Hubbard, Enza, Jimmy Gadd, John Madden, like the John Madden. Isn't he dead?
Yes.
Well,
he's dead. On the cover of Madden 23.
And now he's here to write X's and circles over footage of football players. Thank you, Jadinglage. Thank you, Jadinglage. Morgus. Thank you, Katie Blair. Kayla Higgins.
It's just me. It's me. The French Oak.
Thank you, Lisa L. Marcus Mills. Michelle Moore. Nick Nolte. Nicole Cassis. Paola Garcia. Sean Callahan. Stephanie Pagalis. Suzanne Rode and Sydney Day. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
And good night.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.